Welcome to the Mosh Pit, your home for unsigned punk, rock, and metal artists, where your music goes to be heard.
I'm Sylvia Rosnovac, and my band is kind of a rock band that transitioned out of Americana music, which is, I feel like, the opposite way that most people go. We did it for years and decided that if we were going to stay a band, we would need to do something that we enjoyed. So we started making like heavier rock music, and it really, I think, gave us brand new joy for playing.
Like, I haven't heard like the earlier stuff, but from what I have heard, it's a little heavy.
Yeah. The first two records got pulled. I pulled them from like streaming on purpose because they were so like folk Americana, and I just didn't want people to hear that and then show up and hear what was happening now. I just didn't want to create confusion, I guess, you know?
Yeah, you want to deliver something and you feel like what the earlier stuff doesn't project, like...
Yeah, just different. It's a totally different attitude, too. It's like, you know, you expect to... I guess that made myself like super palatable for a long time because I thought it was what I was supposed to do. And it caught a lot of people off guard when I was very genuine with myself and my music. And I just didn't want to have to feel that type of interaction anymore. They're like, what happened to you? And it's like, well, I stopped pretending to be something I'm not, you know?
Slide.
idea. I mean, I feel like that's music as well. Like, you can listen to a completely different type of music and it inspires you and like, oh, well, I like this idea, but I don't necessarily want to pursue like this genre or something like that. Like, so right. I understand.
And that's instead of like just grabbing the inspiration because I liked certain artists, I like decided to lean full into it and try to do that, even though it wasn't my preferred style.
You are a bassist, correct?
Right.
And a producer.
Predominantly producer. I stepped back a little bit on this last project, but I still couldn't like
knit. And also on top of that, you're a songwriter.
Right.
Yep. So you do a lot. And my question is what do you see yourself most as?
Kind of all three things, really, principally. I see myself as a bassist, and I've played bass for other people's projects. And then I also see myself as a songwriter, and I've written songs for other people. And I'd like to see myself as more of a producer. Like, I'd love the opportunity to produce an album for somebody else. So that's kind of the one that's sitting in the backseat right now. But then I also have to sometimes admit to myself that I'm also a singer because I sing the songs. And that's the one that I don't totally like identify with. It's like, yeah, I'm a bassist and I'm a songwriter and I do all this stuff. It's like, well, you sing too. And I'm like, yeah, well, yeah, I have to.
Yeah. Releasing an album or like releasing like songs under like your name, it feels like you would have to be a singer for that.
The Mosh Pit is still looking for unsigned and indie artists to submit music to be featured on the podcast. You can submit your music at the Mosh Pit at StereoSoundRecords.com. All submissions are welcome. You can also submit topic ideas if you want us to talk about a particular subject.
What's your favorite part of the musical process from that, though?
The studio, like bringing the songs together, the arranging, and like the whole aspect of like trying to figure out how everything's going to fit and come together to make a song. You know, something I wrote that's like six chords and like some lyrical movement like turns into this huge like three guitar part, like moving bass line, like big drums. And I think that's just like so cool.
Interesting to see like that happen. And like in spontaneity.
I love it. I tell people that, and they think it's weird. I actually like it maybe as much, if not more, than like playing live.
I think that I probably enjoy that more than doing something live, just because it feels like you get to be at the helm and like what you were saying, like you nitpick everything. And it's like, by the end, you get to have a full product that like you've made happen. Like every like small detail. I feel like live is a certain level of unpredictability, but I feel like that's also what makes it fun.
It is fun, but I've had to, kind of get over some of that perfectionism with live performance. Like if my guitar player misses a note or if I miss a note, cause I'm gonna, it happens like, or the drummer drops a stick or something. You just have to laugh about it. It can't be a big deal. And it used to kind of eat at me if anything was less than perfect, but I grew out of that and I'm really glad. But in the studio, I get to make everything perfect. Like we get to go back and redo it, you know?
Yeah. So you would still say that you would enjoy playing live more?
I enjoy playing live a lot, but for different reasons, I guess. I might feel differently if I spent as much time in the studio as, you know, we have playing live. Like if that's all I did was studio work, I'd probably just really want to go play live. I think part of it's the novelty factor too. Like we only released an album every 2 years since 2014. So we record an album like maybe like every year and a half. And I think that's just enough to be like, oh, I want to do this more.
Yeah, I think that that's fair. You were talking about how you've taken down your earlier albums.
So I put out my first record when I was 24. I'm 31 now. And my fifth album, like my third and fourth album are online. And then my fifth one will come out. It's like kind of like heavier one will come out next year. But the first two albums I put out were, I mean, I started writing songs and released a record. Like I didn't really sit with it for a long time. I was like, well, if I'm gonna write it, I want to do something. And I was playing with a lot of like kind of country folk bands. So most of the players I got on those records were kind of like honky tonkers, and it showed through. There was like, you know, the lyricism was not bad, but I was very definitely in my early 20s.
Yeah.
It could be a little shallow. You know, it happens. Like everybody gets older, everybody grows up, and there are people who still are like, oh, I love those records. I miss them. And I'm like, oh, you should have bought a hard copy. I'm sorry. It's a person that I'm not anymore, and it's a person I'm glad I was for a while. I just feel like I've grown musically, like I've gotten more confident. Just everything feels like so far removed from those first two records that it just doesn't make sense to me to keep them up.
I also have an argument for, you know, like you have someone that's like truly dedicated to your music, like they'll want to hear the growth after hearing like what you are now or like whatever you'll put out later on. But I do see your point.
My secret is that I plan to re-release them eventually, remaster them and re-release them. So they're not gone forever. I just, you know, for a little bit to try to get my feet under me in a little bit different genre pointed away from the folk Americana world and like to kind of get my roots like down in like the rock scene. And then we can, hey, you can have these records again, you know.
Coming back to it, you know, you would, like, as I was saying, like you probably get ideas from like doing a different, like exploring a different genre. I saw that you had done a virtual concert.
Yeah, in May.
Would you do it again?
Oh, in a heartbeat. That was so much fun. It was just me and my band in an empty, like a giant empty music store on like a full production stage. And it was like the store manager and this like video and audio engineer. And that was it. So I just like got to goof off on a stage and play music and just like talk to like a camera guy the whole time. And it was a little weird, but it was really fun.
People didn't like the aspect of doing like virtual concerts because, oh, it's not live, but like there is probably something certainly gained with doing that. Like,
definitely a lot less, like, I don't know, not like there wasn't planning, there was like a set list and we had everything, but it felt a little easier to kind of go off script. Like, there was nobody staring you in the face. So, like, you could kind of goof off and be a little bit more genuine and like make bad jokes. One time I put my bass down and tried to do like an Iggy Pop back bend and didn't get very far back, but I tried, you know. It's just like stuff that you wouldn't do. You're like, oh, there's people looking at me, I'm not gonna like try to do this, but it's like, oh, they're sitting at their computers.
Yeah, and no one really cares. It's just for fun. Yeah,
I just wanted to be entertained. Like, they wanted something goofy, and I was like, good, because I just, yeah, it was fun.
Focus. Building, rebuild.
like favorite venues that you played at so far?
Well, a lot of them unfortunately are like closed now. Not all of them. Are gone, but like kind of local to Georgia. We love the Foundry in Athens here in Athens, and the Georgia Theater rooftop is super fun. And then Saturn in Birmingham is one of my favorite places ever that I've played. We played there like 3 or 4 times and I love it. We've been pretty fortunate, actually. We've played a lot of good venues. Our first time at the Masquerade, like ever, will be this coming Saturday, though, so I'm looking forward to that.
That's cool.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure that I know someone that's played at the Masquerade once, and it was like he says that it was probably like the top for his venue, so that's kind of cool.
I've heard that it's great, and that's why I'm really looking forward to it.
How do you write your songs?
Pretty quickly. Like out of the blue, like I'll get like a line in my head or like a melody, and then it'll roll around in there for a little bit, and then I'll pretty much sit down and finish the song within like 15 to 30 minutes. I'm one of those people, like I have a friend like this too. I talked to him about it because I thought that I was kind of alone in this. Like if I can't finish a song when I start writing it, or at least mostly finish it, I'm probably not going to finish it. Like, I can't sit down and, like, then come back to it, and then, you know, it's just, like, all or nothing.
Yeah, I think that I feel very likewise. As far as, like, lyrically related, we would sit there and, like, brainstorm for 30 minutes, and if we couldn't fully flesh out an idea, like, we just had to drop it. Those 30 minutes are probably the best way to figure out if, like, a idea holds like water. Or what does your partner play in the band?
Oh, guitar. It helps a lot in writing a song because I'll be writing, and then like sometimes every just now and then I'll try to find a chord change that fits under, because I play guitar well enough to write, but not like not a great guitar player. And yeah. I'll you know, be singing a melody and like moving through chord changes writing, and then I'll like yell down the hall, I'm like, hey, what chord do I play next? I'm singing this. And be like, hold on. And he'll grab a guitar and then be like, oh, go to like the B flat minor. And I'll be like, oh, and then try that. And be like, no, that's not it. And then we'll try. It's really helpful.
That does sound like it'd be helpful. And also pretty fun as well. Just like having someone to, yeah, persistently help with music.
Yeah. He's my biggest cheerleader, like kind of in a very, he doesn't even know that like I'll write a song and I'll play it, and like he'll be like, send me the voice demo for that, like the acoustic demo, and I'll be like, yeah, sure, okay, and I'll send it to him, and it's like, eh, song's fine, like I guess. And I'll walk into the house and hear him like playing it on electric guitar, like learning it and like making up parts, and I'm like, oh, this song clearly like is actually pretty good if he wants to take the time to.
Yeah,
that's encouraging.
That's awesome. You had started making music whenever you were 24, is that what you said?
That was my first album. I started writing songs when I was like 23, but I've been playing bass since I was 12. Yeah.
Did you do it for school or anything?
Mm-hmm. I did. I took jazz lessons and I played bass and trombone in middle school and high school. And I played like upright bass and yeah.
That's cool. That was like always the instrument that I wanted to play, was upright bass. Like, it seemed so cool, and then, like, I got to play barry sax, and I was like, oh, my heart is set on this. Because bass, like, I think that bass is just kind of, like, the coolest voice in instrumentation. Whenever it's done correctly, you feel so, like, liberated.
I'm pretty partial to it for that reason. Like, everybody, you know, that the joke, oh, it's just bass, and I'm like, yeah, but I wouldn't want to, you know, I love playing bass. I love it. I've never had any interest in being a guitar player, like, that wasn't what I wanted to do. That wasn't, and I guess like my favorite thing about it is a friend of mine is a great bass player, and he'll always say, you know, I'm like, well, my bass line's not that impressive. And he's like, listen, nobody notices the bass when it's doing the right thing, but as soon as the bass is doing something wrong, like everybody knows it's there. And I'm like, I guess you're right. So
yeah. Do you still play trombone?
I sold my trombone in 2017. Like, I finally let it go.
That's a shame.
I know. I wish I hadn't, but it needed a new home. It was a nice horn and I wasn't playing it.
Yeah. Like, it wouldn't be a very necessary addition to the type of music that you make anyways.
I mean, I like ska a lot.
Yeah, but
if I'd kept it, I just would have wanted to make a ska album and then I'd end up divorced. It's fine.
Understandable.
My drummer would get on board, though. He likes ska, too.
What music influences the band?
I'll start with, like, our shared influences. And right. I think the biggest shared influence in the band is, like, our Foo Fighters. Like, that would probably be, like, all of our, like, if we had to name a band where we're all like, yeah, we're on the same page with this. And then the drummer and I luckily both love groups like Death From Above 1979 and Royal Blood, so like really like drum and bass heavy kind of stuff. And then I really like a lot of different types of music, but most influential to me lately have kind of gone back to like high school in my listening, and then listening to a lot of like Jimmy Eat World and My Chemical Romance and The Used again. Like,
band like MCR, like, for as much of a meme as they are in the music world nowadays, like, they still put out some really good stuff. Like,
yeah, a lot of the times I'll like joke. I mean, they are, it's very, it can be like really theatrical, but I kind of appreciate that about it. I don't know. I like, I also really like, my favorite bands growing up were like Nirvana, Pearl Jam, Stone Temple Pilots. I didn't get into like Soundgarden until a little later on because but I really liked Temple of the Dog, and I kind of, and actually found myself on this last record, there were a lot of songs where I tried to emulate Chris Cornell's vocal movement. That was what I studied to write some of these melodies.
That's kind of cool though.
When I think about like huge evocative, like emotional, like vocals that aren't necessarily traditionally like pretty, or like clean, yeah, polished, he's what comes to mind.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you could say the same with both the like Pearl Jam and Nirvana.
Oh, my engineer tried to get me really hard. He was like, sing more like Eddie Vedder. And I was like, no. I love Eddie Vedder, but I have a natural, like a ton of natural vibrato, and I was trying to like make that less noticeable because I think a lot of people equate that with kind of like the country warble, like Emmylou Harris.
Yeah, it kind of feels antiquated.
I had to work so hard. I actually did like a ton of vocal work on myself for this record to retrain myself to sing in a different way.
Yeah, training is very useful.
I approached it like an instrument finally, instead of just like I can open my mouth and sing on pitch and like it's fine. I was like, okay, you practiced bass, you know, you practiced your trombone, you practiced piano, you practiced everything you've ever played. Why aren't you practicing like getting better at singing?
Hey, this is Cassidy Paris. You're listening to my brand new single, Wannabe. We'll be right back.
What advice would you give to a up-and-coming band/artist?
I have a few pieces of advice. Like the first one I actually talked about on a podcast on Wednesday, and it was, if you're going to release an album you're really proud of, hire a publicist. Like, yeah. I think that's my best piece of advice. And a lot of people think like you don't get to have a publicist until you're like on a label or like famous or whatever. But I honestly don't think that anybody ever gets signed without one. There are companies out there, that's their whole job, is to make you look really good.
Yeah.
Put your record in front of new people. So it's worth it. It can be pricey, but not, you know, like shop around selling anything. So, and also be nice. Like, just be nice to people.
Yeah. Seems like common sense, but I guess people are like that.
We've had bands open for us that are like, leave, and this is like years and years of this, and it's not all the time. We get like really lucky sometimes and make really good friends, but then there are always the people who show up, they play, and we're like, hey man, nice set, and they just like kind of stare at us and then they leave before we start to play, and I'm like, oh well, I guess we won't work with them again. Yeah. Which may be a big loss, who are we? But still, like, I've always tried to be friendly. I think it's important, and there's no point in acting like snotty about it or entitled. Like, we're all just doing our best.
Yeah. I mean, everyone's just trying to make music, get paid.
And I think the other thing I'd say is, like, even if you're, like, young, if you're going to want to tour, like, figure out a way to be active. Like, go for a walk. Like, get a hotel with, like, a treadmill. Like, buy a yoga mat and carry it with you. Like, you're going to sit in a car for 6 hours at a time. You have got to move.
Yeah, but that is pretty degenerating. What are like the big things that you plan on doing this year, like as far as the band goes?
We're finally traveling again, this starting in August, which feels huge. And like kind of, it'd probably take me a minute to get my sea legs back under me. I'd gotten like really good at like being gone for 4 days at a time and like spending a lot of time in a car and then doing like the quick load in and like sleeping in hotel beds, but I can't wait. But I'm also like, ugh, I'm gonna sleep so badly the first few weeks. I know it. And I'm grateful. Like, I can't wait. I'm so excited.
It's a labor of love. It's like what you do. And That brings me on to ask, what is probably like the most notable thing that the band's done so far?
We got into Billboard magazine. I got an interview with Billboard in May of last year, May of 2020, which was not a great time for that to happen, but it's still, we were all really proud of it.
Yeah. A lot of people that I've talked to already, and I haven't done too many of these, they've been like, yeah, everything was going really good until we hit COVID, or it was like, yeah, nothing was going on, and then COVID happened, and then...
Nine was definitely everything released that May, like all the press leading up to it started in like February, March, April, and it was just like a really bad time, but the release has already been planned, and there was nothing really, you know, we could do about it.
Yeah. That's very unfortunate.
Met with the distributor and everybody had their stuff ready to go, and it's okay. It's a record called Bad Luck, so it was kind of funny.
Yeah.
I mean, I had other good press leading up to the album. It was great. American Songwriter and Glide, and actually got on NPR, mentioned on NPR, had song played on NPR. The album did well enough when it released, but like
it wasn't necessarily what you were expecting, but
you know, we had to cancel, like everybody did, all of our tour dates, like everything canceled.
Yeah. And now the problem is that everyone's trying to get on to like where it is open. There's a huge like backup of it,
and so much closed, like so many venues closed.
Yeah.
So a lot of the stuff that would be honoring like our dates, they're not there anymore. I'm glad there's still a band. I know a lot of bands who didn't make it, you know?
Yeah, for sure. That's probably one of the hardest things that like a band could ever go through.
And release years are tough too, financially. So it was like I did the release, and then there was COVID, and then I was like, you know what? Let's make another record.
That's really all that you can do, though. I mean, as far as being able to get like your name out there, like yes, you need a publicist, but you need content to also post. And
publicists won't touch you if you aren't trying.
Yeah.
But any publicist worth working with, let me rephrase that. Some of them will take your money and never do a single thing for you.
Yeah.
But any of the good ones will look at your content and look at your presence and listen to your demos and your record if it's done, and they'll tell you like, yes, we can do something with this, or like, no, here's what you need to do. So
yeah.
You're right about that. Definitely. Content is like, you have to have it.
Yeah. I feel like that's just, I don't know. All of this is hard to deal with as an artist, but like, I feel like it probably makes you stronger, and it probably like, everything that I've heard is basically people just like refrain and like think hard about like their like direction as a band and kind of gain a little bit more inspiration and are ready to go back and like do more. I can understand why like being closed up for like a couple months it led you to the idea of, hey, let's make another album. I mean, it makes sense.
And I got to make, like, I was going to do kind of another, like, lean a little bit heavier under the rock side of Americana, and just like having everything shut down, like I just totally changed directions, like just pointed my feet the other way. And it was more of not like a, I don't care anymore. It was like a, who can tell me I can't right now? Like, who's going to tell me I can't do this right now?
I don't see why anybody would tell you not to.
You'd be surprised. I've had some interesting pushback on that front from people who have come up to me at shows even and been like, well, I liked you better when you played softer music. And I'm like, okay, that's great. Don't come. Yeah. Sorry.
Like, yeah, it's just not what you're doing as a musician anymore. I think that I get why people are like that, but like, I don't really understand why you wouldn't let an artist progress and do their own thing and like find their own sound pretty much.
Try to be nice to people about it. I'm not just going to be like, yeah, screw you, buddy. Like, doing something different now, and I'm sorry if you don't like it, you know?
What would you say the biggest way you make money from doing music is?
Playing live. We finally hit a point where we can ask for an amount of money that makes sense for us to like.
That's kind of like the thing that would scare me about doing that is like, yeah, you don't know what to ask if like you're going into it completely new.
I think a good rule is if you're traveling, you can always at least ask for your expenses to be covered. You know, like you can do the math on like hotel and gas and like food for the day, and you can always at least ask for that.
Yeah.
So that's a good starting point. We just kept gradually asking for more and more and more. But with every like successive record release, you know, it was like we put in the work, we put in the money, we had the release, and then we played the shows for a year, and then we'd ask for a little bit of a pay bump.
I mean, yeah, that makes sense. Like showing consistency in your work, like that also matters. Any stories, anecdotes?
Oh, so many. So many stories. Because I actually used to tour on fiddle with outlaw country artists.
Really? And,
oh yeah.
Wait, like you played the
for a bunch of outlaw country bands before I started doing my own thing full time. I got to watch the actual Hatfield and McCoy families have a tug of war match that devolved into a fist fight that was so bad that people got life flighted out of that field. And I just remember standing there going, who thought this was a good idea? Who thought it was a good idea to let the Hatfield and McCoy families play a game of tug of war? And if they're like, oh, they do it every year. I was like, oh.
That's really interesting. Was it just then there, or was that just like a part of like the occasion?
Apparently they just came to that festival. And I found this out because I was walking, it was November, late October, early November, it was freezing. I was so cold. And I'm like bundled up walking through the merch, like people's booths set up, you know, people sell like weird stuff, vendors, food. And there's this cute little pig, this little teacup pig, tethered to one of the little posts. And I was like, oh, hello, aren't you precious? And somebody spit next to me and went, that's a Hatfield pig, and kept walking. And I was like, explain this to me. Just looked at the nearest person and was like, what is this person talking about? And then
yeah,
that night, the tug of war game.
That's wild. Do you have anything that you would like to close on? Like any promotional ideas, any like last thoughts?
I don't really know. I think I used my best story with the Hatfield McCoys.
Dragon Sword! anymore.
Yeah, I don't think I've got anything else. I really lucky to be here. Thanks for having me. Like in general, yeah. Like still happy to be here in a lot of ways after last year. So
yeah, well, I appreciate it. You were like the third person that I've interviewed so far.
Okay.
So maybe at some point we could have you do a physical interview.
I
like,
love that.
Yeah, we have a new studio coming up. It's about to be ready. It had gotten actually flooded out like the week after I had started.
I saw that on Instagram. It looked pretty bad.
Yeah, I was at work and I was like going through Instagram and I was like, I haven't checked up on this in a minute. And like the first thing I saw was flood and I was like, oh no, like that's not good. But I've reached out to him, tried to help in any way that I could. And, you know, just everything seems to be going back now. And It looks really nice. I'm sure that we'd love to have you there.
Very cool. I'd love that. And I'm glad to hear everything, like, worked out okay.
Yeah. All right. Well, I appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks so much.